This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Beth Ford, President and CEO of Land O'Lakes. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Land O'Lakes Beth Ford next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The nation's agriculture producers are caught in the middle of depressed commodity prices and inflated costs for farm inputs. Land O'Lakes President and CEO Beth Ford says uncertain outcomes over tariffs and market access further cloud the agriculture outlook. Ford says farmers are challenged.
There's some stress, obviously. This is, if you're a grower, the third year of low commodity prices and high inflation. So, the break-evens are high, and especially on the bean side, you know, they're kind of in a lost position, and that's concerning. We are seeing farm income weaken. And I think the dairy members had a strong year last year for a number of reasons that we can talk about, but that dairy position has started to weaken as well. And so there's some concern. This is really the time of the year where I think farmers are excited. They're getting ready to be in the field. They're planting, you know, further south and they're coming north. They're trying to make decisions. We're seeing delayed decisions, which implies they're looking at commodity prices and at costs and a number of other elements to determine what they want to plant. And then they're looking at the markets and this disruption, at the current point from discussions of tariffs and what's happening in trade, that is an issue. Interestingly, when I was with the members and the tariffs were announced, this is, the first discussion with Canada, Mexico, et cetera, and I asked, how might I think about representing their view of what their concerns were. They said, they were willing to give the president and administration time. They understood that these things are going to be disruptive and they want to be supportive. And I think that that's certainly been the truth from a perspective of what the member is considering. At the same time, they were worried, about discussions about immigration and labor. That was a primary part of our conversation. So, a lot of things going on right now impacting grain price, impacting farmers and their profitability, and then a wish for some stability so they could understand how they're making investments and what tactics they need to employ to drive to profitability this year.
Before this crop year started, the American Farm Bureau and President Zippy Duvall were talking about 20, maybe 30% of producers not being able to find operating loans for the season. When the farmer is stressed, that also puts stress on the retailer and the input supplier. Is that working its way? Is it backfeeding into the co-op?
Interestingly, I think that the cooperatives are in position with inputs this year. So I think from a planting perspective and from inputs prior to the enactment of tariffs, they have been in a decent position, but I'm more worried about 26, to be honest. We're going to see the full impact of tariffs and what's going to happen on inflationary cost pressure, and market access. And so I think that the inputs are in the country. They were at a price that was, while still elevated, didn't include all of the implications of tariffs. And I'm continuing to look out. Now, you mentioned farm loans. Yeah, we are seeing loan volume increase. We have our secure finance program. We're seeing more farmers access that through their local, which would tell you, if they're they're accessing loans, they're looking at their operating loan position and trying to make sure that they have access and liquidity.
We're 2 years past getting a new farm bill. And certainly different implications for the crop sector and for the livestock sector. And, of course, dairy not only included in the farm bill, but then the reform that we saw in the federal milk marketing order. That two-year delay, how is that impacting?
We do need a new farm bill with improved support programs. Looking at what I see in Washington right now with my government affairs team and when I'm in Washington, it looks like right now the priority is on the tax bill. And so I don't think we're going to see any action, real action taking place on the farm bill till the end of the year at earliest. And the implications of what's going to happen on tax and the reduction in, in spending will have an implication then for what happens with this farm bill. Nutrition programs being a priority, and are we going to get, enough folks to vote for the farm bill? So, yes, we are 2 years past. We do need a refreshed farm bill, whether it's reference pricing, whatever it might be. But I don't see that occurring at earliest until the end of the year.
Can you see an impact? And you've mentioned this, but I'll begin this with a straightforward question. Can you see the impact now on your either co-op or members from either the talk or the implementation of tariffs?
Well, we've had a war room, as most companies have, for a number of months. And as I said to the team, we can't run around with our hair on fire every time there's an announcement or a discussion of what the tariffs are. So we have it at a pretty detailed level, looking at the implications across our whole business portfolio, in our cost basis, et cetera. And, of course, there are some implications, but then we look at strategies and tactics to offset that or look at different alternatives. In terms of whether it be ingredients or sourcing locations, et cetera. So we feel ourselves in a decent position. Now, our success, we say this and we mean this, starts with the member success, the farmer success, the local success. So the first thing I want to know is, have we put the local in position at the best cost basis and best product availability position possible so that they can make sure that they're interacting with the farmer and are able to do this in a profitable way? And we have been in good position. As I said, what I'm seeing with many of the locals is that they are in good position from a supply perspective. They aren't seeing the full brunt of the tariff impact on their cost basis. And I'm more looking at what is going to happen in 26.
Well, the exercise of tariffs meant to forge a better trade relationship, more opportunity for U.S. farmers and the ag industry. From the agriculture perspective, from what you see, what do we need to fix? What needs to change?
We need more market access. I mean, market access and trade is fundamental to the profitability of the American farmer. And what is it, 1 in 3 rows of corn, 1 in 4 of beans, sometimes I get those mixed up, 18-19% of dairy is exported. So it drives profitability for the American farmer. We need to expand market access. That is absolutely central. Now, I think as I've noted, the members and the farmers want to give the president time to reset trade arrangements. I think that that's fine. And we've heard say from the secretary and from the president that there's a discussion that they understand the implications of these tariffs and of this trade disruption for the American farmer and will likely try to come in with some types of support payments. There's some concerns that I have, and one is that the CCC, which is the funding mechanism, is kind of low on money and won't have reauthorization at least till September 30th. I think they were down to $4 to $5 billion right now, and we don't know any specifics, but I do know that the president does pay attention to the farmer, and obviously the secretary has been out in the country and has voiced support for the farmer. I think that's a good thing. The concern I have on tariffs and trade is the displacement of our trade arrangements with key markets. So in the 2017 time frame, and I saw a really interesting chart from Tom Halverson at CoBank of late, talking about beans and how in that time frame 90 million acres were planted from the U.S., 90 million acres were planted from Brazil. We had a stronger position with China on beans. And since that time, Brazil has added 30 million acres. And, you know, our export volume has declined with China. And at the same time, China has been working a real program to become more food self-sufficient. I think they're about 95% self-sufficient now, except for beans, for their hog population. So, you know, that market has not been primary. And where has it shifted then to Mexico? Mexico has been a critical partner. And so this disruption, the challenge, I think, is at the same time that you're trying to reset the trade arrangements, which I think is right, you have to make sure that you continue to expand market access and recognize the long tail impact of a change in this dynamic. And obviously Brazil is going to have a monster crop. They may have just completed harvest, and they could bring on another 90 million acres of production, and that's just in pasture land. That's not destroying the Amazon. So they are a powerhouse in export markets, and the risk, of course, is the relationships over time. I think in the short term, I think that the president and the secretary have voiced support for the farmer, an ability to work with a program to maybe make up the gap. It's the long-term implication that I have concern with.
Beth, an adequate farm workforce has been mired in the debate over border security and immigration policy. That's not new. Do you think the timing is right for a resolution from Congress? And even the bigger question, what are the consequences if they don't?
So interestingly, I want to say a couple of things. You know, as you may know, I've taken over the chair of the Immigration Committee for the Business Roundtable, where I'm on the executive committee, and I took this from Tim Cook, and I was pleased to be asked because it is so central to the farmer. Now, that role supports all businesses with the idea of immigration, the necessity of immigration to support the number of workers needed to grow the American economy. That's the priority areas of the business roundtable and businesses writ large. Now, in that convening, and certainly our position is border security is number one priority. And I think the president has noted that. You see border crossings at an all-time low. You see a real focus on that. And I think that's what the American public wants, certainly what we want, what businesses want. Border security has to be the priority. From that, then, when there's a belief that the border security is where it needs to be, and that includes investments over time, that includes also deportations, which you see occurring, then it will be time for the right conversation. I think right now it's a little premature. The administration's priority right now is the tax bill. And we see them focus on that. By the way, we've been working on that as well. We want reauthorization of the 199 tax benefit. If that wasn't reauthorized, then we're going to be in a situation with the largest tax increase to the American farmer in, you know, years. So that has been a priority area. Right now, what we're doing at the Business Roundtable is really looking at the analysis to have the supporting information to when it's time to have the discussion with the administration as to the implications and the needs and the gaps in the workforce. We can have that data. Now, for ag workers, you know, the Congress passed twice on a bipartisan basis Farm Worker Modernization Act, and it didn't pass the Senate. So there is some appetite. When I'm in Washington, there is some appetite and some reflection and understanding that it isn't as though these are jobs that are being taken from American workers, and they recognize how critical and how critically important immigration is and support foreign workers for the ag space writ large. And that is just one of a number of things. I heard the president say, we recognize this. We want to work on a program. I'm excited to hear that. And we don't know any specifics, but we are certainly ready to have a conversation about what would make sense to give us the kind of support from a workforce perspective that is necessary to continue to feed, you know, the American public.
The consequences if they don't?
Well, I mean, again, you know, what we're seeing is, you know, farmers and producers who say, Beth, I'm in crisis. You know, I can't get planted. Or if I don't have a worker on my dairy, my business is done. I'm gone. It's gone. So the consequences are dire, frankly, for many businesses. Now, many of them have been accessing visas, and I think that's great. The question is the efficiency of that model, the number of visas available, who is able to do this. And you see at the same time a level of consolidation, farm level consolidation occurring. And part of that is due to an inability at a time where, you know, the average age of the farmer is late 50s. So the question is, what workforce is there to support the American farmer and to support agriculture writ large?
You've bumped this a couple of times, so now I'll come with the official question. Unless Congress takes action to extend existing trade policy, farmers are in for an incredible increase in federal assessments in their business. Lost progress on the death tax is also a consequence. So what are you specifically telling lawmakers in Washington?
Yeah, from a tax perspective, you know, there's a lot of support for this. You know, for $199, when I was in Washington a few weeks ago, there was a discussion in both Republican and Democratic offices of reauthorization, the recognition that this is important at a time, especially where farm level profitability is weakening, that they understand the implications of for the cooperative of being able to reinvest in rural communities. So there is much support, and the question I was asking and what I was being played back to me is whether we can have it be permanent, the permanence of it, so that we aren't debating this on an ongoing basis. So from a tax policy perspective, I think it's in a good position. Now we're going to see about the rest of this tax bill, what the implications are, how that moves ahead. This is, I think, the number one priority of the administration.
The issue, though, with the tax policy and with the farm bill appears to me, how do you pay for it?
Yeah, and I think that has been the challenge. I mean, there's discussions of cuts in nutrition programs, so then the question there in the debate is, can you get enough support across the Congress? And so how do you pay for it? Where are the reductions occurring? Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I get, you know, questions at different times about DOGE and about the efforts here. And I think all of us who've been in business for a long time, this is my 39th year in multiple industries and certainly in this industry, is that you're always looking to say, okay, maybe over here we got a little heavy in staff, or if this isn't where our priorities are strategically right now, when we need to reallocate and we probably need some efficiency, developed, and there's technology available, and how can we leverage that? So I think the theory of it is absolutely correct. The question is the scale of it. And one of the ways that the discussions are moving is whether major policy areas like Medicaid deserve a look and should have a significant cut. Now, that has its own hair on it, if you know what I mean. I mean, many rural areas access Medicaid for healthcare. And that is concerning because the number of rural hospitals that have shut down has been more significant. Access to healthcare, you know, when I'm with members, when I'm with farmers, a number of times the conversation goes to healthcare access for their families. And so, there's never a perfect solution for these things. There's never and this is a pile of money that is obvious we should be cutting. There are always implications. That one has attention. You see, what is it, three states that had made this a constitutional amendment, Missouri and South Dakota inclusive, and I think Oklahoma is the third, and the implications of a dramatic cut in the Medicaid program would have dramatic state-level implications for spending and potentially for taxes. So all of these have a lot of intertwining issues tied to tied to any kind of cut. And I think that's what the administration, that's what the work is left to be done. There's a framework about what the spending could and should be. It doesn't have specifics on it yet, and it won't until the Congress is in there and they're working across the House and the Senate.
Land O'Lakes has embraced climate smart agriculture practices and sustainability. So from a thumbnail sketch, what success can you report, and can Congress help, or is Congress in the way?
Well, you know, what we heard from the secretary is an elimination of that Climate Smart program. Right now, we're focused on the investments that were made by locals and by members, having them get paid, basically, having them be reimbursed as they had expected. Now, I want to maybe characterize the way we think of that work, period, overall. First of all, we've always had a focus on differentiated data capture and analytics as a way to feed back information to the farmer and to the local for how can they make the most profitable, not the max the yield, but most profitable decision on their farm. And what are the programs available for them for the things, the work they're already doing? Hey, I'm putting on a stabilizer. Hey, I've made these changes to my practices, or more importantly, to the investments I've made on my farm. And these are the programs available to have that return, something that's profitable for the farmer. We start and have started that program and that attention on soil health. And we say that long-term soil health not only improves yields or is important, but it makes the land more resilient for the farmer, and that is how they invest their time, their efforts, et cetera, on their land. So how do we think of it? We think of it like that. It's, I think oftentimes we use words, or there's used words, our words used in it, and it feels like, this is kind of a, some kind of a special program. And really, what we're trying to do is focus on how the farmer has over time been investing in their land to make it more resilient, to understand what's happening in their soil and their soil health, and then to improve the resilience of that farm over time. Now, we can connect that with a number of companies that want those kinds of practices that show that data, that show that improvement, and that's a positive. But it isn't the primary issue for us. It starts with the farmer. What should they understand about their land, and how can they make sure that they're being either reimbursed or there's a return for the investments they're making?
So how does agriculture change the perception of a consumer from the ideal of the American Gothic to that of the modern-day family farm and the need for technology to achieve both sustainability and productivity goals?
What's interesting is when we do surveys and we ask about the farmer is incredibly trusted. Now, when people react, they react to this, large-scale farmers, big farmers, corporate farmers. And I'm like, what do we mean by that? Okay, 95%+ of farms are still family owned. And how does a farm get bigger? It's because Joe decides he needs to retire. He doesn't have anybody else in his family who's going to take it. He decides to sell his land. And Steve, who's next door, has a balance sheet that allows him to do that, and he acquires that farm, he gets bigger. And or, who's the largest landowner in Iowa, I think it's widows, so they use this to collateralize loans and or operating expenses, et cetera, over time. So, this idea, I actually, even in that, when we talk about and do surveys, big, small, you see, we focus on, in our packaging even, the cooperative and the American farmer, because what the consumer has said is nobody is more trusted than the American farmer, that they trust the cooperative, and they'll say, hey, jeepers, if we'd have known you were a cooperative before, we'd have even been buying more from you. And so I think that there may be a view that that's not been the case, but our research supports the idea that the farmer and the local cooperative is admired.
Well, Beth, we want to thank you for your leadership over your career in the agriculture industry, and certainly for being with us on this edition of Open Mic. Beth, it is Open Mic. You've been here before, and today you know you get the last word.
Well, Jeff, thank you for the time, and thank you for the opportunity to have this discussion. It was broad, and I appreciate that. You know, it's bumpy times, but what I admire most about the American farmer, what I see in these rural communities, et cetera, is their resilience, their focus, their belief, their collaboration, and their willingness to do the hard work. And I think all of us should be grateful, and I will continue with my team to prioritize their health, their families, their communities, and support them in any way possible.
Our thanks to Beth Ford, President and CEO of Land O'Lakes. Our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.